All right. Welcome to another Wing Girl Method teleconference. I am ridiculously excited about this one because it's about body language, which I have been learning a lot about recently. I didn't realize just how powerful body language was, but last night I was at a dinner party and somebody there said to me that effective, I forget what the exact quote was, but the way that we communicate, 80% of it is through our body language and our tonality, and only 20% of it is actually the content that's coming out of our mouth, which means that what we're saying to people with our mouths doesn't matter as much as how we're appearing to them and the tone of our voice. So I'm really excited to dive deeper into this topic. And a few weeks ago when I was deciding to do this teleconference, I asked my pool of expert friends and I said, who do I talk to for body language? Who's the expert? Who do you recommend? And they all told me about a wonderful person who I happen to already know named Zach. So I reached out to Zach and Zach is on the phone with us now and he is going to teach us all about sexy, effective, masculine, confident body language. Zach, thank you so much for doing this call with me.
Thanks, Marnie. All right, I want to actually address something you just mentioned, which is the
false quote.
So what's that?
The false quote, which I screwed up.
Yeah, the 80% of communication being body language. This is actually something that's tossed around quite a bit. They say 93% is your voice tone and your facial expression. And this was actually, it's a little bit misunderstood. This was a study done by a guy named Morabian. And what he found was that when there was a mismatch between what you said and the look on your face, or what you said and the tone of your voice, that your body language, being the look on your face and tone of your voice, was believed much more than what you said. Because I think that's one of those things when I heard 93% of communication is body language, you'd think you could watch foreign films without subtitles and you'd know what was going on, why the guy had a tea kettle on his head or whatever it was. So that is true. It makes a bit, and it's particularly, I mean, it's relevant when it comes to attraction because that's where a lot of the communication's happening is the believability. Anybody can say anything, but it's not backed up by body language that communicates what you want it to communicate, then it's not going to really get through. So I just want to jump on that. I just wanted to jump on that.
No, thank you. I was kind of asking for clarification when I did already announce that I'm going to screw up the quote.
Cool.
But that was a wonderful explanation and a great way to get started. But first, I want people to know about you and who you are and why you actually know what you're talking about.
Okay. Actually, I just wanted to get into one thing, it ties into body language, but it's just more of a thing for the call. Technology is wonderful. It's allowing us to connect right now in spite of our geographic boundaries.
Yeah.
And it allows me to reach many more people than I otherwise would. But there's some drawbacks, and part of this does affect your body language. But if you're conscious of these potential drawbacks and you can actively do something about it, you don't have to be pulled along by the tide of technology and fall into those traps. So one of the drawbacks of technology is it's incredibly disembodying.
Okay.
And that is when we're on the phone, when we're on our computers, when we're interfacing with machines, we tend to lose our sense of ourselves in our bodies and we lose our sense of our body's position in space. We lose our coordinates. And you can see this when you look at people working at the computer. They almost look like they're being sucked into their computer screens.
Yeah.
They're pitching forward, they're leaning forward, and their faces are getting closer because they're mentally in their computers, literally. Their minds are in what's going on the screen. And it's also one of the reasons why even with hands-free technology, talking on your cell phone while driving is much more dangerous than talking to the passenger sitting next to you because there's something about interfacing with technology that takes us out of our bodies and takes us out of our spatial awareness with what's going on around us. So,
okay.
Since this is about body language, as you're listening, I want you to become aware of where you are in space. If you're sitting at your computer, be aware of your butt on the seat of the chair. Place your feet flat on the floor.
And I'm not going to ask you to sit up straight or anything like that. We both know that asking somebody to sit up straight never works. And right. just makes you feel more self-conscious and bad about yourself for not being able to maintain it. And I'm going to get into why that is in a little bit. But if you have your computers, you know, open to take notes, I want you to be aware of the gravity that your screen exerts on you. And I want you to see if you can mentally lean back from your screen. So you're aware of the space. There's air in between you and the screen. You don't need to be pulled in towards it. And you're not going to be able to hold on to that sense of yourself, of being in your body. All the time, so I don't want you to kick yourself when you find that you're you know back in your old habits. But if you keep bringing your awareness back to it, back to your own body, whenever you find you've lost your sense of yourself, it'll start to bleed into other areas of life. So this will start to train you to be able to balance your internal and external awareness, which is really crucial for mastering body language. That might sound a little woo-woo. I'll explain what I mean by that, is that we have a certain amount of our attention on the feeling, the sensations in our bodies. We have a certain amount of tension on what's going on outside of ourselves, really, of visual and auditory stimuli. And, you know, you need to be able to carry on a conversation, pick up on cues and that sort of thing. So often people have an imbalance there where too much of their attention, you know, self-consciousness is when too much of your attention is on yourself, so much of your attention is on yourself and how other people are viewing you, that you get in your own way. But it's possible to go to the other extreme where you're so outside of yourself that you lose control, really, of your body language. You leave it up to your habits. And when you leave it up to your habits, you're not typically, you're not sending the signal. You're not in control of the signals you're putting out there, and there's a good chance you're putting signals out there that are, you know, turning women off or saying, you know, revealing things about you that you might not want out there. So, very quickly, one more drawback about technology is how it affects your ability to pay attention. And with so many things competing for your attention, it's easy to get pulled by whatever's blinking or digging or dinging or bouncing up and down in your menu bar. So at least for this call, I want you to turn off anything on your computer that isn't necessary for learning about body language right now. You've got the PDF, you've got that open, you've got maybe a document for taking notes if you're not doing that by hand. But if you're listening on the phone, shut down any browsers, turn off email alerts, instant messages, close Facebook. Probably just my mentioning Facebook, you want to check it one last time, that's fine. Check it one last time, then shut it off. You know, if you don't need it to listen to this call, shut down your internet connection entirely. So
yes, no distractions.
I just wanted to get that out of the way. Yeah. Because I am going to be going over some subtle things, and a lot of this is going to be not just me. I'm not going to be telling you, you know, we'll talk about positions, but there's a subtle interplay between positions and how you feel and your perceptions that I'm going to be asking you to tune into. And you're not really going to get the effect of that if you're, you know, carrying
browsing
on a chat or yeah, if you're browsing while you do that. And I'm horrible for this. I mean, I I do this, you know, I tend to do this all the time, but for something like this where it's so much about your body and your physicality, this isn't one of those things that you want to, you know, have on in the background.
Okay.
That you'll get some benefit, but you really get the benefit if you're paying attention. So Marnie, you asked about my background.
Yeah.
and where my understanding of body language comes from. And I'd say my first real education in body language is I trained as an actor in New York City in my early 20s. And acting is body language.
Yeah.
Right? The words, that's all it is. The words are written down for you, so what you say is taken care of. And acting, your job is to bring the script to life by, you know, through your body language. And this is where I learned about presence, you know, stage presence, how to command a whole audience's attention by the way you stand, by the way you move on stage. I also learned how the slightest gesture, the slightest bit of tension can communicate something very powerful. And I think most importantly, I learned about how your thinking affects your body language and how your body language affects your thinking, your mental processes. Again, I'm going to get
Definitely.
Into this in a little bit more detail, but this is something that's quite important, quite central to what we're going to be talking about today. After my training as an actor, I went in a completely different direction. I moved to a Zen Buddhist monastery, and I lived there for 4 years, became a Buddhist monk.
Cool. Crazy.
And I'm not going to go too deeply into that, but what that led me to was I ended up having some injuries related to the hardcore meditation that I was doing, and that led me to something called the Alexander Technique. And a brief explanation of what the Alexander Technique is I could explain it as posture is a reflex activity, right?
Okay.
Standing is a reflex. In babies, I have a four-month-old right now, two-year-old and four-month-old, and if I push on the four-month-old's, the bottom of his feet, this reflex will kick in and he'll start pushing back. And when I pull him up to his feet, right now I can, you know, holding his hands, of course, he stands, his feet push the ground automatically. And it's a whole coordination. It's not just your legs sitting up, but there's a whole coordination from your feet all the way to the top of your head where certain muscles engage and certain muscles release that result in our standing upright. And it's not just standing, but walking, grasping, vocalizing. These are all reflex activities.
Okay.
And the problem is that as we grow up, for various reasons, some of which I'm going to get into, we start overriding these reflexes. We start interfering with them. And we start holding ourselves in unnatural ways. And doing this once in a while isn't a problem, but over time, these malcoordinations become habitual and even create structural changes. So, you know, for example, you could, you end up using muscles, you know, your posture reflexes aren't working very well, so you end up holding yourself up using muscles that were maybe designed to, you know, move your arms around. You're using them to take the whole weight of your body, and that creates tension, creates pain, and that sort of thing. So
okay.
I was really taken with the technique. I ended up training as a teacher. It was a three-year full-time training course, and it was while I was finishing my training as an Alexander Technique teacher that I started to learn about attraction. And, you know, like a lot of people, I have horrible luck with women, or it wasn't luck, but the signals that I was sending out were not getting me the results I wanted with women. I was able to attract some women, but they were never the girls I really wanted. And, you know, I was able to date a little bit throughout my 20s. I was in my early 30s at this point. And I was able to date a little bit throughout my 20s after the monastery. And, but again, there was always this sense of, you know, I would sort of settle for girls that, you know, just because they'd have sex with me.
Right.
I said,
easy.
Okay, well, that's better than nothing. But whenever I actually liked a girl, things didn't go too well for me. So, you know, I learned about attraction. I read some books. I got products. And I started applying these things that I learned from theater school, my training as an actor, and from the Alexander Technique. And I started making progress very quickly, I think largely because of the training that I've had.
Yeah.
And so I started coaching about 5 years ago and created a training course and created a course about a year ago called High Status Humor, which some of you might be familiar with. And I found the body language made such a profound impact on me, and that everything that I was teaching on some level involved body language, and that the quickest way to get massive change in the way men were viewed by women, as well as in the way they saw themselves, was through body language.
Okay.
You know, my experience has been that any attempts to change yourself that don't address body language, don't address the physical aspect, any attempt was incomplete and wasn't sustainable. And you're going to find out why in a second. So what we're going to cover today, I'm going to start off with some broad theory. I want to redefine the way we think about body language, from holding ourselves in different positions to something that involves a little bit more of the whole person, your thoughts and your emotions, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And then I'm going to narrow it down and give you some practical applications and some things that you can do right away to start getting change in the way women respond to you, and change in the way you feel as well.
Nice. I like it.
And today we're going to focus on your body language. So, you know, learning to read a woman's body language is important. It's an important skill. You need to time your advances correctly so you know where she's at, so you know what to do next. But that's a whole other subject that we're not going to get into. So the focus today is your body language, how you can use it to your advantage with women and in all areas of your life. And you're going to use your body language in two ways to do this. All right. The first is you're going to learn to send signals which trigger an unconscious and involuntary attraction response in women. The second way is that you're going to learn how to use your body language to change how you feel and how you see yourself. And I actually want to start with the second one right now. I want to talk about the relationship of your body language to how you feel and how you see yourself. And this isn't something we usually think of as one of the functions of body language, but it's arguably the most important aspect. And it's certainly up there. And unless you understand how thoughts and emotions and actions or body language interact, you won't be able to take control of the signals you're sending out. It'll be, as I said, incomplete at best. So let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
And this is something I learned as an actor. This is one method which a lot of actors use to access complex emotions at will, right? You're on stage, you're eight times a week, six nights and two matinees, and you have to be on when it's time to be on, and you can't, you have to have something reliable to be able to put you into that emotion that you can do, reliable and repeatable, that you can do on command.
Okay.
So we know that emotions determine our actions, right? This is sort of the broad understanding common understanding. When you're angry, you might storm out, you might punch walls, you might bark at people, you know, you might throw things across the room.
Right.
That's your emotions affecting your actions. But our actions also affect our emotions, and they do it. Of course, they do it through the response you get from other people, but they also do it directly. So, for example, if you were to punch your sofa cushions repeatedly right now as if you were in a rage, or if you were to, blurt out something angry, if you were to, just say, go to hell, if you blurt it out, and you commit to it. I did it a little bit, I held back, and I was a little self-conscious about it and did it in a bit of a silly way. But when you do that, you start to feel angry. And that's without any sort of visualization or imaginary context, or the action itself changes how you feel.
Interesting.
And Marnie, can you relate to that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I can trick myself into feeling a certain way when I have there's certain times where I'm kind of upset with my husband about something, and I want to make myself more upset so that he can see that I'm upset, and I can actually go in that direction by certain words that I say or by sitting a certain way. So my actions definitely
it ends up reinforcing.
Yeah.
Exactly. It reinforced the feeling. And I chose anger in this case because it's an easy one to demonstrate. But it affects all different emotions. It also affects your thoughts.
Absolutely.
So again, if you lash out, if you start, take a pad of paper or something, just bang it against the desk, and just start doing some angry things, your physiology changes. You start to feel angry, and you'll start to memories of things you're angry about or reminders of things that upset you will start spontaneously, coming into your head.
Interesting.
Okay. And
I have that whenever I'm nervous or whenever I'm kind of not really in an energetic mood, I'll jump up and down and I'll like dance around a room, and that will immediately lift my spirits and make me more energetic and happier.
Exactly. It's always good to start with behavior because that's the most controllable thing.
Right.
We can't always control our thoughts. We have some limited ability to direct them, but we can't, deny ourselves thinking about something that's, recurring in our heads, especially when you're infatuated with someone and you're under the sway of all these powerful chemicals. But you can start with your behavior, and that will filter down to your thinking and to your emotions.
Right.
Again, I don't want to sort of say that means that you can be happy all the time by acting happy, or that you can hold on to any emotional state. But I just want to make this connection because you'll find out why in a second. But I just want to make that connection between your what you do and how you feel. And I talked about some broad actions there, but this includes your body language, it's particularly relevant to your body language. And let's talk about how your emotions affect your body language now, not just your actions, but your body language. So what happens is when you feel a certain way, when you're thinking something, let's say you're feeling nervous.
So like before you go and you approach a woman, for example, so you do, nervous.
Yeah, or if you're sitting in a bar, I've worked with a lot of guys that just being in a bar or a club situation is quite overwhelming for them. They start to feel nervous. And what happens when that happens is what happens inside you is you feel uncomfortable and you start doing things to make yourself feel more comfortable. So, for example, if you're nervous, you have this energy that you want to channel somewhere. And so you might channel into bouncing your leg to dissipate that energy. So what I'm getting at here is these signals that we're giving off, or these manifestations of nervousness, they're partially involuntary. You know, your heart rate accelerates and that sort of thing. But a lot of them are voluntary, except that they're automatic. In other words, we have control of them if we're aware of them. But if we're not aware of them, we're just going to start fidgeting and moving around and closing off our body language and doing those things because that's what feels comfortable to us at the moment.
Right.
So I'll give you another example besides nervousness. If you're feeling intimidated, you know, if you're around a group of guys that are particularly, you know, high status alpha guys, or if you're around a particularly attractive woman, you're feeling it, you know, one thing that you might start doing, again, it's, you know, there are different manifestations, but let's say you cross your arms. And, you know, this is one of those things that I always get annoyed when people would make one-to-one equations with body language and feelings. They say, you're crossing your arms, so therefore you're closed-minded right now. And that's not always true. Sometimes you're crossing your arms because you're cold and you want to conserve body heat. But sometimes you're crossing your arms because if you uncross your arms and you have your chest exposed like that, you feel uncomfortable. You feel vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And this crossing of your arms is an example of what I call a self-protective behavior.
Okay.
Which I was going to save, but I could... Now I'm going to save that. We're going to talk about self-protection a bit because it's a real key to undoing some of the body language that's killing attraction.
Okay.
So... does that make sense so far?
Yeah,
we've got your emotions leading to certain signals, and if we can get in and change your response to those emotions, in other words, if you feel like you want to bounce your leg up and down and that's going to make you feel comfortable, if we can stop and inhibit that impulse to do that, it transforms. Let me actually tell you a story about that because there's a subtle point here. I was talking with some friends. I was in one of those moods where I wasn't feeling very social. I wasn't feeling on. You know, my friends were planning going out. I was out for a drink with them, and I thought I'd just afterwards I was going to go home and, you know, and watch TV on the internet or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was sitting around talking, having a conversation. I realized that I was sitting really slumped in my chair. You know, my chest was collapsed and my hands were folded across, in front of my belly, in front of my belly. So my first impulse was, okay, well, I know about body language. I'll just open my body up and I'll sit up, you know, I'll sit up and, you know, correct that. But I stopped for a second. I said, well, let me think about this for a second. What is the intention behind this body language? In other words, why is this comfortable for me right now? Why did I choose this? You know, even though I wasn't conscious that I chose it, why did I choose this particular way of sitting? And I thought about it for a little bit and I realized that it was self-protection. I felt unsafe socially. I felt socially unsafe. I felt vulnerable. I didn't feel like I could hold my own in a conversation. And so I was protecting myself. And this is a response. You know, if you're going to be attacked physically, it makes sense to limit the amount of surface area in the front of your body where your vital organs are, collapse forward, hold your hands in front of your torso so your vital organs and your genitals are protected, and protect yourself. And again, that makes sense if you're going to be physically attacked. But if you're feeling socially threatened, the same response kicks in.
Okay.
So what I did was I started to open up. I sat up and I leaned back a little bit and I allowed my, you know, arms to rest on the arms of the chair and stay open with my chest. But I didn't just open up physically. I opened up to the emotion of vulnerability and discomfort that I was experiencing. So rather than just opening up physically and sort of staying where I was mentally, I recognized the vulnerability I was feeling, and I just allowed it to be there.
Okay.
And what I found was that within a couple minutes, within 2 minutes, I was in a completely different place. That feeling of vulnerability transformed, literally transformed into a feeling of strength, right? I passed through it and I started to feel on. Yeah. And I was able to hook into the conversation more, better. And I was able to come up with things to say, and I was feeling social. I was feeling engaged. I was feeling more confident. And it was because I changed my body language, but I didn't just change it physically. I changed the intention behind it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So how can, if you can relate everything, to women in attraction, that would be,
absolutely.
All part of it, but yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I'll tie that back. So if you're talking with a woman and, you know, you're feeling nervous, you're feeling intimidated, because intimidated is really a strong word, but that's how we feel by particularly beautiful women, or even just women that were, you know, that they could be particularly beautiful, or they could just, you know, we could just be, you know, infatuated with them or interested in them.
Yeah.
It triggers this response of wanting to, wanting to self-protect. That's just one. Self-protection is just one thing. I'm going to talk about a few other things. And if you try and put on a posture artificially, puff your chest out and that sort of thing, without addressing the intention behind why that posture exists, which is, again, to protect yourself, you're not going to be able to sustain it, and it won't be genuine. It'll look robotic. It'll look like a put-on posture. You know, we've seen this. You see people puff out their chest.
I've seen many guys do it where it actually makes them put up a barrier because of the way that they've puffed out their chest. It seems so unnatural, and it's very unattractive to me. And it actually doesn't send out a creepy vibe, but it sends out an aggressive vibe that I don't like. And I know a lot of women don't.
Right, because what they're doing is they're masking how they're really feeling and what they're really thinking and how they really see themselves by trying to put on a posture. So, again, it's the combination of physically opening up in that circumstance and emotionally allowing yourself to feel the vulnerabilities. Really, the vulnerability is the best word of staying open. Again, that vulnerability doesn't it doesn't last. You know, at first you feel uncomfortable, but as you sit in it and you stay open to it and you let go of that temptation to shut down, you start to take control of your body language and you start to feel more powerful. So I talked about, and I'm sort of getting ahead of myself what I was planning to talk about, but I talked about self-protection. I talked about, in nervousness, displacement, you know, having that energy need to displace it. And then the other sort of thing that we do that shuts us down, that signals, you know, insecurity or like, you know, low status is, hiding.
Okay.
Right. It's a little bit different than self-protection, but we want to hide. We don't want to be seen. So, I was going to get into status a little bit before I got into this, but basically, this low status body language that I'm talking about, it exists.
So what, I'm going
to
interrupt
you.
So what would be, what does it look like? Like, so most of the guys that are on the call, since this is a teleconference, it's a little bit difficult sometimes to discuss body language, and everything that you're explaining is wonderful. But I think most of these guys want to hear what is bad body language or what is low status body language. If you can,
you know what, if you look at the PDF that we sent out, if you look at image 9, the one of Vince Vaughn and Luke Wilson.
Yeah.
And I'll give people a second to get there. Vince Vaughn has this incredible openness, right? And it's all, you know, he's taking up so much space. He's not self-protecting. He's actually physically vulnerable in that position. If somebody wants to attack him, he would be not in good shape.
For me, all I see is super sexy.
Exactly.
And he's not good looking.
And that's all that's communicated to women. It's an immediate impression, exactly. It's a signal that's given off. But what's going on there is if you're the king, if you're the leader of the tribe, if you're the high status guy, you don't have to worry about being attacked.
Right.
You're in charge. You're wide open. If you're the guy at the bottom of the totem pole, you kind of got to watch out.
Right.
Right. A great example, a great way to think about status, a great microcosm is high school, something we've all experienced, right? When you come in as a freshman or, you know, here in Canada, I'm in Vancouver, or just ninth grade, you are not a high status guy. You're at the bottom of the totem pole. They have hazing and they sort of put you in your place. And that's a time where you don't really want to stand out, right? You want to hide. You don't want to walk down the hall and have all the older boys, you know, as a guy, you don't want the older guys to notice you and single you out as somebody they want to pick on.
Right.
So we huddle down, we make ourselves shorter, we pull our shoulders in, we lower our gaze. These are all ways of basically saying, I am not a threat. There's no reason to bother with me. I'm not a threat. And, you know, these things help actually, you know, they help avoid conflict. If everyone's walking around wide open and people are feeling threatened, then you know, among certain animals that they start fighting over territory is what happens. But we develop these signals so that we don't have to fight all the time, because you walk in and you walk in a room and Vince Vaughn is like this, and Luke Wilson doesn't have a particularly bad body language there, but next to Vince Vaughn, he looks like a little boy.
Oh, absolutely.
With the, not because of height either, just because, you know, his hand being across his lap and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Vince Vaughn is obviously the high status guy.
Yeah, for me, like as a woman, I find him super sexy. I don't find him attractive, like a good looking guy. But every film that he's in, mm-hmm. every interview I've ever seen, he owns his space. Wherever he is, he owns the room. Like on that couch, he owns it. And he's basically saying with his body language and his face, this is my space. Mm-hmm. So.
Exactly.
Like, exactly. You're welcome.
So. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. It's not a hogging space thing.
No.
He's a host. You know, it's like welcome to my house. Let me just get into one more theoretical thing. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves because I was talking about how your body language makes you feel, but what we're talking about really right now is the signals that your body language sends.
Okay.
And you mentioned something. You mentioned when you see that, you just think sexy.
Yeah.
And you know, a quick sort of primer on attraction. I know these the guys that are on the call are students of yours, so they have a pretty good understanding of attraction, but different people use different language, and just to make sure we're on the same page, you know that attraction is not something that we choose, you know.
Right.
Attraction is not a choice, and it's not exactly an emotion either. And I want to talk about something I came across in Robert Cialdini's book, Influence, sort of classic book on persuasion. And he talks about mother turkeys. Okay. Mother turkeys are really good mothers. They're nurturing and they're really protective of their young. And they discovered through lab experiments that this nurturing behavior, this nurturing response, cleaning and warming them, protecting them, taking her baby chicks under her wing, was triggered not by the chicks as a whole or the idea of the chicks, but by one particular feature, which was the cheep, cheep sound that they made.
Okay.
So one of the experiments they did was that one of the natural enemies of the turkey is the polecat. And if scientists put if they pull a stuffed polecat towards a turkey, mother turkey, on a string, the turkey will attack it viciously and tear it to pieces. But when the scientists put a recording of the cheep, cheep sound inside the stuffed polecat, the mother turkey treated it exactly like it was one of her chicks.
Interesting.
Right, she cleaned it. She was warming it. She took it under her wing. And on the similarly, if one of her chicks didn't make the cheep cheep sound, the mother turkey would mistreat it and even kill it. So this mothering response was triggered by a signal. In this case, the signal was the sound. And this is one example of how our brains work, is we have these responses in our brains that are signaled by certain things. So attraction is one of these responses that is signaled by certain things in the opposite sex,
okay.
Right? And so what is this response? It's actually a drive. It's in a deep, deep part of our brains. It's a drive like hunger or thirst, and it leads to certain emotions. It leads to a physiological response, a feeling of craving, and it triggers a sequence of behaviors. It triggers pursuing behaviors, right? When the attraction response is triggered, you go into, men and women, sort of go into this mode of how do I get that person, you know, to have sex with me or to date me. And it's an automatic response. So, you know, hunger is an automatic response, right? You smell or you see delicious food when you're hungry. you know, bam.
Yeah.
You want that.
Zach,
seeking that food.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second, but we're about like halfway through. So I would love for the guys on the phone. I love the theory, but I would love to get into like
some practical
what
stuff
they can do.
Okay. let me skip along here. Sure. Sure.
Okay. Sorry about that.
So let's look at some other pictures then.
Okay.
If you look at image number 10 of Megan Fox, I'm sure that's the best picture in here.
Right.
So here we're turned on by signals, right? The signals are the arch in her back, her skin, the shape of her body. That triggers the attraction response, right?
Right.
It triggers this response in you, and it basically turns you on. Women respond to triggers as well, but the triggers for them are body language triggers. Okay? So men are respond to signs of fertility, health. Women respond to signs of two things, and this is when we're going to get into the practical things: signs of status and signs of sexuality.
Okay.
So women, this attraction reflex is triggered by status signals and sexual signals. Okay, this triggers the attraction reflex. So status we've talked about already. So we talked about a little bit already. So status is, again, your body language is affected by how you see yourself. How you see yourself affects how you feel. So if you see yourself as, you know, deserving, you know, being an attractive guy, for example, and this would come because of your experiences. If you've dated a lot of women and a lot of women are attracted to you, and you see yourself as an attractive guy, and you meet an attractive woman and you think, yeah, I've attracted women that are, you know, this attractive before, you will see yourself as a high status guy, and that'll just come across in your body language. But if you don't see yourself that way yet, you need to prime the pump. You need to put on high status body language, and that'll change directly how you feel, but it'll also affect the way people respond to you, which again will feed back and ultimately change your beliefs. And I just want to highlight this because we can get stuck in high or low status ways of seeing ourselves based on our body language. So for example, again, if you, let's talk about the voice for a second. If you were always picked on, or if you were, you know, in school, let's say you had a stutter or something like that, or let's say you went through a certain period in your life where it was really important that you were seen as a nice guy, and you started speaking very softly, right? You were very soft spoken, and you had this sort of airy sound to your voice, this non-threatening thing. Well, you know, speaking very quietly is sort of a low status thing. It's this hiding intention that I was talking about. But the problem is when you speak softly, you feel low status, and people treat you like you're low status. And then, of course, that affects your belief that you're low status, which continues the cycle. Okay. So we can break this cycle by changing our body language, by turning up the volume, for example, speaking more loudly. Speaking more loudly is taking up space with your voice. You know, we see Vince Vaughn taking up space with his body. Speaking loudly is saying, I have the right to take up space with my voice here. And you'll notice when you're in situations, you know, I had an experience a few years ago where I decided to go into court to, fight a parking ticket.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even planning on fighting it. I think I was just hoping that the person didn't show up. They had this thing at the time where if the person who gives you the ticket doesn't show up, it's thrown out. But the whole court was set up to makes you feel low status. The judge is literally sitting up on a different plane, looking down on you from on high, and you're standing there. It's designed to give the court this authority and this feeling of status. And I noticed that I was speaking so quietly and being so meek with my body language as I talked to this judge and explained, you know, at the time my financial situation and that sort of thing. And I came away from there. It's kind of a learning experience that in that situation, I felt very low status. If I went back there, I would be on the lookout for that. I would be aware of that tendency in myself, and I could then do something about it. So a lot of this is about bringing awareness to, we have a guy on the call who sent in a video, and he talked about how when he was talking to the camera, he's talking in a teacher-student relationship or relation, he's comfortable. It's when he gets around, you know, women that he's interested in that his body language starts to change. So if you can be prepared for that and know what those low status signals are and inhibit them, then you can start to change. Now, interestingly enough, I've talked about low status body language because children have very high status body language. I've got two kids. They're wide open. They have no problem taking up space with their voices. They're loud. They're perfectly poised. Their chests are open. But what happens is as we get older, mostly because of social pressure and because of imitation, we start to do things to lower our status. And if we can unlearn those, if we can undo those low status things, high status is inevitable. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what's the first step undoing it? Like how do you walk me through what it visually looks like?
The first step is recognizing what it is.
Okay.
Letting it go. And so we're going to get into particulars right now.
Okay.
Is recognizing what those things are, letting them go, and then noticing the impulse to bring them back when you're in an uncomfortable situation and not giving into that temptation. So let's turn to the first page of the PDF, and we have a picture of Mark Zuckerberg.
Okay.
And if you look at him, this was taken the other day, actually. I got it from the newspaper talking about the IPO. You see that tension in his cheek. In image two, I have an arrow saying here, right?
Yeah.
I've identified that muscle there is the muscle of self-consciousness. And you can do it right now. Start contracting that muscle. And notice how you start to feel awkward and uncomfortable.
Okay.
And notice also how just looking at this picture of Mark, I start to feel awkward. I start to feel uncomfortable. Right?
Right.
Those muscles. So image two, this muscle, for example, and a lot of people have this, and it becomes, again, a sort of permanent feature in a way, a permanent thing. So, you know, your muscle will, you know, it'll engage in a certain way, not in exactly the same way, when you smile, but then, you know, it's not habitually tight in that way. This is a sort of masking that happens. We're uncomfortable, so we put on a mask literally with our muscles of our faces. So we've got image two. Image three, again, you can see it's a little more subtle, but it's still there. There's still that tension in his cheeks. Image four, same thing. I put an image five for contrast because here he's let go of that tension. I'm sure he was coached to do this. I'm sure the photographer, this was a Time magazine shoot, I'm sure the photographer had him literally let go of those muscles in his face, you know, and you can do this. What I have people do is take those two fingers, you know, two fingers on each hand, your forefinger and your index finger and your middle finger, and just massage these cheeks under your face and let that go. I bring this up because this is a big one. This is one people aren't very aware of. There are a lot of low status signals. This is one of them.
Okay.
And
so
if you look down at image...
Because yeah. A lot of the coaching that I do, I tell them change isn't going to happen overnight, but the first step is noticing. Right. So once you start noticing that you do have tension in your jaw, which I'm sure after hearing this, people will start to notice, because I noticed it as I was listening to the call. I was having the tension in my jaw. So it really is about noticing and then relaxing it. And what you said before about like rubbing the sides of your cheeks, it definitely can assist in loosening you up. But the first step is really noticing and possibly even practicing in front of a mirror and seeing what you look like and then practicing going from tight to loose and tight to loose.
Exactly. And then putting yourself in a situation where you want to tighten it up and loosening it. So one thing that I've done with students when I've, I don't do in-field stuff much anymore, but we go to a bar and I did this for myself and I did this with the students, is just sit there and see if you can relax the muscles around your eyes and relax the muscles in your cheeks, and you actually start to change the way you feel. You start to feel more like you belong there. You start to feel, you know, you're opening up and you're not hiding and you're not running away from that feeling of, you know, at bars, I think our club, you know, a club is a very intense social competition in a way. And it can be very intimidating, and it's a very strong stimulus, you know. Not so much for women. Women go there, and they're looked at, and they get attention. But men, you know, there's a lot of competition there. So it can be an intimidating environment. So, you know, go to something like that and just, you know, take a few minutes and, you know, detach from your friends and have a seat and don't worry about interacting with anybody and just release those muscles in your face and notice how you feel.
Okay.
Now, I want you to become aware of something else. If you look at Mark Zuckerberg again, look at that first picture and look at that fifth picture. And notice how you feel different when you see him.
Absolutely.
Do you experience that, Marnie? In
yeah.
number five, I feel more comfortable.
Oh, definitely. He seems relaxed and open.
He seems relaxed and open, and that makes me feel relaxed and open. He feels awkward and uncomfortable. That makes me feel awkward and uncomfortable. And that's something women can't stand, feeling awkward and uncomfortable.
Correct.
And I realized this a while ago. When I'm with someone, that, you know, when I meet somebody, you ever know somebody that you're like, whenever I'm around them, I feel so awkward. And you realize it's because they're awkward.
Absolutely.
Right? They make things feel awkward. So image number six, again, I want to stay with this facial thing again. We have John Mayer. John Mayer, obviously, is a rock star. He's dated some of the world's most beautiful women. He has no problems with his image of himself and status. And I took this as a screenshot from his movie, Where the Light Is, because I noticed in this scene where he's driving along and he's talking, his cheeks are so released and it's so open. You feel so comfortable. Image number seven, he's able to smile there. He's a little bit self-conscious. You can see that muscle kicking in. Image eight, again, you know, caught him on an off day. He was a little bit younger. He's more self-conscious. Those muscles are really quite strongly attracted or contracted.
Yeah.
And you can see the difference between image six and image eight, how that makes you feel. And Marnie, you can attest to this as a woman, how that makes you feel.
Oh, well, always looking at John Mayer makes me feel fantastic. But I completely agree with you. I actually think the reason he is so charismatic is because it's kind of the same thing as Vince Vaughn. He typically has really loose body language. He owns whatever space that he's in. But I'm going to ask you if you can.
What else do Vince Vaughn and John Mayer have in common? They both dated Jennifer Aniston.
True, very true. See, Jennifer Aniston likes good body language.
She likes high status guys. They also both are very funny. They use high status humor quite a bit. But she likes high status guys because she was, you know, and the time when she, you know, both these guys dated her in her prime. I think she's still kind of, for some reason, still in her prime. You know, she's looking better and better. But, you know, she was one of the world's most desirable women, and both, you know, she's attracted both these guys because they have this kind of open, loose body language.
So can you maybe go quickly through the body to say?
Yeah, let's go through. So that's the face. You know, that's one thing. Another thing is raised eyebrows are a signal of low status. They signal, oh, I'm safe. I'm nothing to worry about. And it's quite funny to look at. It's good to do with friends because they can pick up on, you know, they can see you and they can tell you how different you look when you drop those. You drop those things. And I used to think that I looked mean when I dropped my eyebrows, but it doesn't come across that way to other people.
Okay.
It just looks like you're comfortable with yourself, right? So let's go through the body a little bit more. So I talked about the chest, the openness in the chest. Now, a lot of people will puff out their chest and, you know, stick it out. And that's not exactly what we're talking about because I talked about intention. It's not that you're going to stick it out. You're just not going to shut it down.
Okay.
And what happens when you do that is you feel, all of a sudden you get this reflex inhalation. You can feel yourself breathe, right? Vince Vaughn, again, is a great model for this. When I go to a restaurant with friends, I will try and sit, you know, less so now, but for a long time, consciously, I'd sit down and my first impulse would be to push my shoulders together and sit there. And I would consciously open up like Vince Vaughn does in Image 9. This is just such a great picture, such a great model of high-status body language that I consciously sit down, move my knees apart. So, again, you know, I can talk about the physical features, and I'm going to, but we always have to tie them in with the intention. And the intention here is, or the intention that you're getting rid of, is the intention of self-protection.
Okay.
So letting go of that impulse to self-protect. We have a chest. We have tension in the wrists and hands. Basically, it's about, you know, high status is about stillness and openness.
Okay.
Right? Stillness, openness, and taking up space. So, again, I think it's very important, as Marnie, as you mentioned, that you practice this. That's the key. I mean, I can tell you this, but don't wait till you're out on a date with, you know, your dream girl before you start opening up your body language. Sit there in front of the mirror and do it with as many, you know, as few sort of other, don't multitask, just work on your body language. Then add a factor, have a conversation with a friend, with open, well, your body language is that. So you can still keep some of your attention on your body language. Then, you know, have a conversation with a friend while you're out at a busy restaurant or bar. You know, then, you know, have a conversation with an attractive female friend. And you'll start to build your ability to resist the impulses to shut down, which are the signals of low status.
Okay. This is interesting.
That makes sense?
Yeah, definitely. So I wanted to go through some of the questions that I had listed that we would talk about on the call. And probably one that's most important to the guys that are listening and will be listening is how to turn her on while talking to her about the weather. Basically, you're turning her on with her body language. So I kind of want to know what that looks like. So I've heard from other people,
okay,
like don't face her chest on, turn to a 90-degree angle. When you're talking to
right.
And
I so let's talk about that right now. So I talked about status signals, and there's one other kind of signal, and this is very important, but you need the foundation of status before you move on to, and that is sexual signals.
Right.
So let's look at that picture of Megan Fox again, right? Image 10, right? And and if you look at this, if you look at this video, at this picture, I'm sure everybody is right now and enjoying it very much. There are a couple things that make this picture sexy. Of course, she's a beautiful woman, right? This would not work if it was a, you know, 300-pound woman with bad skin and bad teeth. But I wanted you to look at a few things in particular. Her eyes are, her lids are a little bit droopy. Her lips are a little bit parted. Her back is arched. Right, look at those three things. Her arched back, her lips slightly parted. What is that signal?
Sex. So what's the equivalent for men?
It signals arousal. It signals that she's turned on.
Right.
Now, this is the interesting thing. Seeing arousal in the opposite sex signals arousal in us. But only if there's a foundation in the case of, you know, for men experiencing attraction with women, she has to be beautiful. With women experiencing it with men, he has to be high status first. So if you have a low status guy that's putting off, that's showing that he's aroused, that's creepy.
Okay.
Right. So we almost have these four categories. You could be low status and non-sexual, non-aroused, and that's the friend zone right there.
Okay.
You're low status and you're not putting out a sexual vibe at all. Then you have low status, but you are putting out a sexual vibe, and that's creepy.
Very.
Right? And
absolutely.
I think what happens is a lot of, very creepy, and guys hear about, you know, their female friends say, oh my God, this guy was so creepy, he was looking at me like I was, a steak sandwich, and they hear that, and they think it's about the sexuality that's creeping her out, but it's really the sexuality combined with the low status that creeps her out.
Absolutely.
So then we have, you could be high status but not sexual, And that's how you are with, you know, female friends, and how, if you're in a relationship, how you are with most women, and that, you know, gets a certain response, and women are, you know, can be attracted to a certain degree. But if you add arousal, sexual signals to status signals, that's when you're really turning women on, and you can talk about anything you want. You can talk about the weather. You can talk about anything if you're sending these status signals and these sexual signals. So the reason I went over status is you want to get to the point where those signals are more or less habitual, and then you can start sending these sexual signals. So let's look down below at what do sexual signals look like. Look at image number 11. We have Clive Owen.
Mm-hmm.
Marnie, what does that picture do to you?
I like it.
You like it, right?
Yeah.
Now, he's sending off a sexual vibe there. He's looking at you, and you can tell there's something sexual going on in his mind. He's looking a little bit hungry. Now, interestingly enough, now look at image 12. He's still high status there, but he's not sending out sexual signals. Do you see that?
Yes, definitely.
And it does. Now, guys, looking at this, image 11 probably makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable, right? You feel a little bit uncomfortable about Clive Owen looking at you with bedroom eyes, right? Image 12, we're much more comfortable with. Okay, he looks like a cool guy that I can sit down and have a beer with, right?
Right.
So this is sexual signals. So let's talk about those sexual signals and how it is that we get them. Because this is one where it's really not about tense this muscle and put this arm here. This is much more about getting in touch with your own feelings of arousal and letting those come across, letting them come out into your face, letting them come out into the look in your eyes, and looking at her with the thought of that she's sexy, that you, you know,
Is there something that you can give as like a tool for them? Like, cause
yeah.
So that they don't project that creepy,
absolutely,
creepy vibe. Yeah.
Well, the key to not projecting the creepy vibe is to project high status as well,
right. Which is a part of the rest of your body language.
So if your body language is open, yeah, if your body language is open and you've established, you know, sort of high status vibe, you know, I'll talk about very quickly, because I know I tend to get a lot into theory. The reason I do that, by the way, is because I find that when you understand the principles, you can really apply it to every different situation. Whereas if I just give the techniques, and I do give the techniques, it works for one situation, and then you're not sure how to apply it or why it's working or what you're doing.
Absolutely.
So I get into that, but the big difference in low status and high status sexuality is the difference between desire and need.
Yes.
Women want sexual desire. They don't want sexual need. The difference between the two is that need means that if I don't get it, I'm going to be very disappointed, right? It means if I get it, great. If I don't get it, I'm going to be depressed, or I'm going to go home sad or whatever. I need this to happen. Desire means I would love for this to happen. She's sexy. I would love to sleep with you. If it doesn't happen, I'm going to be okay.
Right.
I'm going to be okay. I'll find another woman. I'll go home and take care of myself. I'm going to be just fine. That's the difference between need and desire. And that's the attitude there. When you start looking at her like, oh my God, I need this tonight, please. That's when it creeps around. That's low status sexuality, again,
yeah,
combined with other low status signals. So how do you send this signal? Again, you know, the subtlety of what's going on in, I can't even, you know, we don't even know what's, you know, what's going on in between image 11 and image 12, the subtlety of the muscles in his face there is not something you can control voluntarily. But if you start visually, you know, if you're talking to a woman, you're genuinely attracted to her, picture her naked while you're talking to her. Imagine that you already know that she wants you. You know, imagine you were talking to her friend. So let's do this right now. So imagine there's a girl that you're talking to, and this is actually an idea that I got, Marnie, from a friend of yours. Heard in an interview, David Wygant talks about,
yeah,
what would the look on your face,
yes,
be like if
this.
You knew, yeah, if you knew for sure that she spent 4 hours thinking about you and masturbating last night. That's what she did. Her friends were going out. She's like, I'm going to stay in, and I'm going to masturbate to pictures of, you know, you. Insert your name there.
Mm-hmm.
What would the look be like on your face if you went up and started talking to that girl?
Exactly.
And I'm doing it right now. You get this glint in your eye. You're smiling. It's this confident sort of wry smile.
Yeah, we look like Clive Owen.
And like Clive Owen, exactly. He's
absolutely
looking at it like, I want you, but you want me too.
Yep.
And if you act as if, and this is the real key, this is what I learned in acting school, act as if that were true, it triggers that response in her, and it starts to turn her on. This is very, very important. A lot of guys, you know, I don't know how much, if we have much time, but what I really, you know, what I was planning to get into when I talked about sexual body language, rather than it was the barriers to showing that. Because a lot of guys, you know, they're worried that, you know, they're worried they're creeper out, or they're afraid to hide their show their sexuality, or they feel like showing their sexuality is a loss in status. Again, it's not. Showing desire is not a loss in status. Showing need can be a loss in status. And now I want to look at one more picture here, which is picture number 13. This is Clive Owen again. Now you see what's going on. He's got those cheeks contracted again, but it's still attractive because, and this is a sort of a subtle point, but I did want to make this point, because he's already got that foundation of status and a little bit of sexuality in there, that little bit of shyness is actually endearing, isn't it, Marnie?
Absolutely. He's adorable there.
there's vulnerability there.
Yeah.
And so we've got status signals, we've got sexuality signals, and this is the third kind, which we don't have time to get into, which is a connection signal. It's a signal that he's not a player. You know, if you look at image 12, which again, you know, you say you get turned on by it, but quite honestly, a lot of women might be intimidated by that and think, well, this guy's, you know, I'm getting turned on. It'll still activate that attraction reflex. It'll turn her on, but she might feel like, well, you know, he's so charming that, you know, I wouldn't,
that
you know, I'm not
going
to sleep with him, or I'm going to avoid him. Yeah, he's a player. Exactly. But in number 13, here we've got, if you go back there, we've got a little bit of vulnerability creeping in, which is, you know, I'm not,
If you can have a nice balance between the two, because I think that number 11, face like that, is going to make me want to show my value to a man like that. If he's signaling that he knows something about me already, because that's what I would feel. It's some sort of mystery, some sort of challenge. It's something that's going internally inside of his mind that I don't have access to. So I'm going to want to figure it out. I may not want to let him sleep with me right away, but I'm probably going to give into it when I go back to his house.
Yeah, exactly. Or you might deliberately avoid him because you know if you're alone with him, you're going to sleep with him, right?
Absolutely. He's somebody who I would say, no. But when I'm really meaning absolutely have sex with me, I feel horrible that
now,
I made this choice.
This is such a subtle point that I think it's important. You're going to base what you're going to do right now based on where you're at right now in your life and in your journey. So if you typically have a low status body language, or you have some tendencies that you want to get rid of, or you feel sort of low status, you want to, again, go as sort of high status as you want with that. And if you're usually holding back on the sexuality, practice putting that out there. I mean, I was working with a student who's now a teacher, and I taught him about sexual presence, and he went on a rant. He's a very good student. He ended up becoming a teacher. And he talked about how he just walked up to a girl in a bar and started making out with her because he gave her this. He said, I looked at her and I imagined I was going down on her and I got that look and she got that look. And he said, I think I said, three words to her. I said, hey, how are you doing? And then we started making out. That's how powerful sexual signals are combined with high status signals. They are very, very powerful because most guys don't show them. Most guys don't have the foundation of status to be able to put those sexual signals out there. So again, but if you're a guy who's seen as a player, that's why everybody's different. If you're a guy who's seen as a player or who's, very, very good looking, then you want to bring a little bit more of the vulnerability. So we tend to go through stages. At first, I really needed to work on, status and putting sexuality in there. And then I got to a point where women were, I had one experience. My average with going out on a first date and the women, making out or something happening was more or less, my average was almost 1,000. And I went on a date with a woman I was really, really attracted to, really interested in. And I put, all the stuff.
It just got muffled when you said that. So repeat that one more time. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, basically I went to kiss her and she said no. And she thought I was a player was basically what it was. And she told me that and she was attracted to me and she was interested in me. But at that stage in my journey, there was a stage where that wasn't even a possibility. So I could go full on with all the other stuff. But I needed to pull it back at a certain point. And again, that may not be, some of you guys will be at that level. Some guys will not be at that level yet. And I want you to, not worry about that right now. Just worry on opening up. So again, if we're looking at, talking about high status, we've got openness. So the opposite is self-protection. We've got taking up space and we've got stillness.
Can we talk about these things in more tangible ways? So openness. So
yeah, absolutely.
Arms down by your side, in your pockets.
Arms open. Knees away, opening your crotch. Throat exposed. So your head's tilted back a little bit, but you could also tilt your head down. That's a sexual signal, so that's something different.
I like releasing the muscles in your face. Yeah, I like when men make me go to them. So that
exactly.
A man doesn't lean forward into me, but he'll look down, and that I find attractive.
Yes, leaning back. I didn't mention that. Leaning back is very important. So, I mean, all these things I'm talking about are fairly simple. Take up as much space as possible. So sit down. There's a chair beside you. Put your arm on it. Oh, one other status signal, which is kind of a fun one. And I want you guys to try this because I want you to notice how you feel when you do it. When you talk and you're using your hands to gesture, see if you can keep your palms angled towards the ground rather than towards the ceiling. If you do it right now and you take your hands, you're talking with your hands, turn them up and notice how it's this kind of shrug. It's saying, I don't have any weapons in my hands. Don't worry about it. And if you look at when I'm talking with your hands down, this is sort of taken to the extreme. This is how rappers talk. You know, mm-hmm. They got their hands, their palms down. This is again one of those just evolutionary, signals that we evolved that when you feel high status, naturally your palms tend to turn down. When you feel low status, they tend to turn up. So if you resist that tendency, I learned this one actually when I started teaching, and I'd be in front of a large audience, and that's a status position, just being a teacher. And naturally, when I talked, I noticed my arms were different than when I talked in situations I was less comfortable in. And so I was able to start bringing that into the rest of my life.
Interesting.
So that's another one. Those are just, there are really dozens and dozens of little signals that you give off. You know, we talk about eye contact. The voice is a whole other area. But I think that should give you guys something that you can work with right now that you can take out and start using. And again, the important thing is to do these things physically, but also notice how they make you feel and remember to bring them in situations where you're not that comfortable. In order to do that, you need to practice in situations where you are a little bit more comfortable.
Perfect. Can you actually give me one rundown so that I can visualize this? So a guy is approaching a woman. How does he walk towards her? Walk me through the full body and when he's talking to her, how he should position himself. Just visually how it all would look for a high status person.
So when you're approaching a woman, there's one other concern, which is sort of safety and her comfort level. So I say 135 degree angle when you're talking to her. And this is an important thing when you first approach a woman. I say an 80-20 split of looking away from her 80% of the time and looking at her 20% of the time. So when you're talking to her, this is really best when you can demonstrate. I suggest practice with your friends, but a strange man walks up to you and he's talking to you and he's looking at you the whole time. You feel like there's a big spotlight on you. You feel really uncomfortable and you just want to get out of the situation. If you're standing side by side, I say 135 degree angle or even just next to each other, it signals we're on the same side. We're looking in the same direction. We're seeing the world in the same way. It creates a feeling of connection. And the fact that you're looking at her maybe at the end of each sentence, you're turning to make sure that she understands what you're saying, but you're not looking at her for approval. You're not looking to her to send any other signal. You're looking at her to make sure she understands what you're saying. But then when you're looking around, when I say not looking at her, you're looking at, you're visualizing what you're talking about. You're using your hands. So if you're talking, walk up and you're talking to her and you talk about, one thing I suggest is a lot of observation. So you walk up to, if you're in a bar and you look around, you start talking about the lamps that they have there. You turn, you look at the lamps as you're talking to them. If you're relating them to a story about another kind of lamp, you're using your hands, you're describing it. That's very, very important. Okay, as you start talking to her, your bodies will, as you get more comfortable with each other, your bodies will naturally start turning towards each other. Now, I've heard talk about mirroring her body language. This, at this stage, is a very bad idea because it gives her status. She will feel that she is leading and you are following. You are imitating her, right? So I find it's better to not mirror at this point. Let her start mirroring you. And then when you're in another phase of attraction, when you've, right before you sleep together, that sort of thing, your bodies naturally start to get in sync. Mirroring is one of those things.
Interesting. What about your hands? Like, what about guys who get fidgety? So I know you were talking about if you have to know why you're fidgeting and control it at first, but let's say for right now, just to, like, where's the best place?
If you're going out tonight and you're feeling fidgety, honestly, you have to practice it. Practice releasing your hand. You get people on stage, non-actors or first time you're acting, you get on stage, you don't know what to do with your hands. You end up doing weird things with your hands. Just let your hands hang by your side. It feels weird. It feels awkward. It feels wrong. It looks totally normal and it actually looks really good. But it feels at the same time, you feel because you have that desire to self-protect and to make yourself feel more comfortable, you'll want to do things with your hands that you have to practice that. There's no shortcut. Can you put your hands in your pockets? I suppose that's one thing you could do, but that, sort of signals something else. It can signal something else. It can signal, holding a drink, not holding in front of your body, but holding it down by your side. That is a very different look than holding in front of your body. So that's, you know, fidgetiness. You need to practice letting go of that impulse to fidget. And that's the only way you'll stop. If you try and hold your hand still, again, it'll look robotic. You have to let go of that impulse. And you know what? It actually, Marnie, it goes very, very quickly. You practice this a few times. When I work with students, we do, you know, we'll just focus on release your hands as you talk. We'll focus on release your legs as you talk. We'll focus on keep your eyebrows down as we carry on this conversation. And in a very short period of time, I could spend an hour with a student, or maybe an hour and a half tops, and their entire body language is you know, basically taken care of. I mean, of course,
wonderful.
There are little things they can do, but they've gotten rid of all those fidgets and all those, you know, all those little things that are signaling nervousness and insecurity and low status.
So one of the things that I'm hearing the most from you that I'm going to end this call on as a final note is really, for anybody who's listening, is to go out there and start noticing. Start being in your body while you're out to notice what it is that you're doing instead of focusing on, does she like me? Does she want me? What is she doing right now? Start interacting with people and really taking notice of the things that you do with your body and just in your mind, remind yourself, or you can even do it out loud. I have a hair elastic that I wear around my wrist all the time to remind me of things, to do things. So if you need that hair elastic to remind you to actually open up and loosen your body, eventually from what I'm hearing, it will become an automatic response. So it's really just about noticing right now and becoming really aware and then moving towards
and
the body.
Practicing what you want so that you notice when it's not there.
Okay.
In other words, because I know what it feels like to be open in my chest and to have relaxed hands, I can notice when there's tension there. But if it's always there, I'm not going to notice it as much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Is there somebody that you can recommend that, you know, people research and look at to try and emulate?
Yeah. You know, check out Vince Vaughn. You know, watch John Mayer. John Mayer actually has a good, there's a thing called, John Mayer has a TV show where he did this thing for MTV on YouTube. It used to be on YouTube. It's quite good.
Oh.
Denzel Washington in American Gangster is fantastic for high status body language. Daniel Craig in Layer Cake, anything Daniel Craig does pretty much, but Layer Cake, he does some amazing, not just high status body language, but for sexual body language. Viggo Mortensen in Eastern Promises. Fantastic high status body language. Those are a few things. I love to watch movies and look for this stuff.
And then go practice.
But you know, one of the best ways to learn this stuff is by modeling, and rather than learning the move your shoulder here and put, is to actually look at it, see it, get a picture of it in your mind, and then let that come into your own body, because we it's much more accurate when you have a clear picture in your mind of what it looks like, and then you let yourself do it those tweaks rather than thinking in terms of, you know, separate parts.
Perfect. So assignment to anybody who's on this call: go watch one of those movies that were just listed, or even like little clips of it that are on YouTube, and then go in front of the mirror and practice for 15 minutes playing around with your body and really being comfortable with feeling uncomfortable.
I think they already play around with their bodies for,
right, exactly,
for
I'm not condemned. No, whatever, go do that if you want to
in the
just
mirror, you know, in the
up.
Mirror, that could be an interesting experiment
there,
yeah.
You go. But the thing is that I'll tell one final story, then I'm gonna wrap this up. I keep saying that.
Sure.
So for me, I had a stroke when I was 20, so I used to be a dancer when I was younger, and I stopped dancing because half of my body wasn't working as strongly as the other half of my body. So I stopped dancing because I got embarrassed. I would literally dance in a circle every single time that I would start dancing because my right side was slower than my left. So I got really uncomfortable. And when I moved to Los Angeles, I had a home that has lots of mirrors. So I said, I don't want to be uncomfortable dancing anymore. It's one of my favorite things. I'm going to, one, start taking dance classes. But number two, I'm going to learn how to be comfortable with me, my own discomfort, and push past it. So I moved to the table and I danced in front of the mirror, and just like, you know, that point where you move, like when you're in the car and you sing and you suddenly catch yourself, you're like, shit, people are watching me. And there's an option. You can say, screw it, and push past it. Or you can pretend that you're like, you know, fidgeting with a dial or something. So
you can pick your nose anyway, even though people are watching.
Exactly. But so I just said to myself, I'm going to push through it and just extend as far as I can, just dance and have a really good time. And that really opened me up, and I started going to dance classes, and that's where I started discovering different things that I could do with my body again and how
that's great.
Yeah. And so if anybody's listening,
I didn't know that about you, Marnie. I didn't know that you'd had a stroke and that you went through all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the way to do it. Oh, the one thing I would say is, you know, it depends on your level of comfort, but you want to do this gradually, right? If you're really, really self-conscious, you know, don't start singing in the middle of City Square, you know, in the middle of the street. That's going to be a little bit too much for you. So do it in little ways, and exactly get to the point where...
And work your way up to doing that.
Work your way up.
That is super fun. I have done things like that, and it is super fun. If you start doing things for you instead of for other people and start just enjoying life, that's when you can get to that open space. But thank you so much for being on this call. It was wonderful information that I'm sure every single person on the call or any person who's receiving the information will get a lot of value out of. How do people get in touch with you, or is there some way for people to work with you one-on-one for body language?
Yeah, if they sign up to bodylanguageformen.com, just threw a page up there. I'll have a body language program coming out in a few months, but I'm still putting it together. If they want to get in touch with me, I would say the best email address is Zach, Z-A-C-H, at ZachBroman.com, ZachBroman.com. Or you can shoot a note to Marnie. Marnie and I are good friends, and she can, you know, pass things along to me. If they want to sign up on bodylanguageformen.com, then I haven't started yet, but I'm going to be sending out something called Body Language Bullets, which is really quick, short, practical body language tips. Sort of the antithesis of the way that I did this call with a lot of theory, but just short things that you can take out and practice right away, because I think that's really what people need right now.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Marnie. Well, I'll talk to you soon in any event.
Yeah.
But thanks, everyone, for being on the call and for a couple of you sent in some pictures and some videos. And we didn't get into those specifically, but I did gear some of what I was talking to what I saw on those pictures, and it should address some of the things that were in there. So thanks again, Marnie.
Thank you.
And
thank
I'll talk
to
you
listening.
Soon.
Okay. Bye, guys. Bye, Zach.
Bye.